So last week we gave a little bit of an introduction to the prohibition of Tevel, of eating fruits, vegetables, grains, all produce that grows in Eretz Yisrael, that the proper trumas and maizes have not been separated. Last week we spoke a lot about whether this is a real din mina Torah b'zman hazeh, we're talking a din mina derabanan, perhaps different kinds of foods, and we went to just about almost all scenarios that we have b'zman hazeh, it's most probably only going to be derabanan for a variety of reasons. But apa b'chein, derabanan is still derabanan. As we spoke about on Friday night, we still want to observe with all the dini Torah and all the dinim derabanan as well. So let's see if we can just familiarize ourselves a little bit more with some of the issues relating to the Isser of Tevel. So we'll kind of almost break it down to just to get a little bit more of a conceptual understanding as to what's going on, and then give some real practical ways in terms of avoiding any pitfalls in terms of frushes, trumas, and maizes, b'zman hazeh. When we speak about the Isser of Tevel, so again, as we mentioned last week, that if you have real Tevel gomer min haTorah, it's a subject to a very, very serious onish. An onish of a misa b'dei shemayim. Whatever that means is also not exactly clear, but it's a serious violation in terms of ichus kashrus to eat something that trumas and maizes were not taken off of properly. In a similar vein, we find that if a non-kohen eats truma, that's also a very, very serious aveira. And believe it or not, it's the same onish. It's the same misa b'dei shemayim. Which leads to a very conceptual kind of a question as to what, if anything, is the relationship between these two Isurim? What is the kasher between, on the one hand, anybody eating tevel, and the other hand, a non-kohen, a zar, eating truma? So Rashi has a somewhat of a startling statement in Maseches Yevamah. So Rashi seems to say that the two Isurim are very, very much linked to one another. And conceptually, the reason, so to speak, the nature of the Isur of eating tevel is the b'nei truma shabo. Because every tevel has a little truma, so to speak, in it. It's not really, it hasn't been separated yet, but it has the potential of truma in it. So when you eat the tevel, you are in effect eating truma. So that's the reason why the Torah says that you're not allowed to eat tevel. That's the reason why the Torah says if you eat tevel, yechayim misa b'dei shemayim. Because if you eat truma, yechayim misa b'dei shemayim. So Tosfos asks the obvious question against Rashi. If that's the case, so then why is it that a kohen is not allowed to eat tevel? And that's clearly that a person cannot take the attitude that, well, I'm a kohen, what do I have to worry about separating trumas from? No, that's clearly not the halacha. So if Rashi's right, that the whole isser of eating tevel is al shem the truma shabo, so then why should that isser carry over to a kohen? So the answer to that question is probably along the following conceptual lumdish lines, that a kohen is only allowed to eat truma when a kodesh baruch hu invites him to do so. The Gemara uses the phrase, m'shuchun gavoh kazachu. That the Kohanim are like invited, they're guests by Kodesh Baruch Hu's table. So, be'ikaron, nobody's allowed to eat Truma. Truma's Kodesh. How can you eat Truma? The Teretz is that Kodesh Baruch Hu sent you an invitation. So, Kol Zman that he sent you an invitation, you're invited. And if you didn't recite, if you received the invitation, you're not allowed to crash the party. So, Truma is only given as a gift to the Kohanim if it's already Hufrisha. When it's separated, then, and only then, is the Kohen permitted and invited to eat from it. But Kol Zman hasn't been separated, so then the Tevel is be'isura omeit. I'll shame the Chumash Shabo, and even the Kohen is not permitted to eat the Chumash. So when all the dust settles, there's no question that Tevel is off-limits for everybody. It's off-limits for Yisrael, off-limits for a Kohen. Truma is permissible for a Kohen, but it is, of course, off-limits for a Yisrael. Somebody once asked me a question. They're Abbas Yisrael was getting married to a Kohen, so they, I guess, must have heard about the Psukim in Parshas Emor, that now they're allowed to eat Truma, for whatever that's worth, Bisman is there very little. Now they're allowed to eat the Truma. So they said, oh, now the Ladi Chuma, they don't have to be bothered with the peppers and the cucumber and the tomatoes and the farm anymore. We don't have to separate anymore, right? Because I'm about to become a Bas Kohen. So I explained to them, you are a half amina in the Tosis Kasha. You are a Kasha of Tosis in Yavam. But Lamaisa, there's no truth to it. The bottom line is that a Kohen has to deal with, as they reckon with all the dinner of Trumas and Maisas, the same as a regular Yisrael. Truma, we very rarely have Bizman Hazeh. Not that we don't have it. We have it, but we'll talk about it in a moment how we get to it. But no Kohen is going to even dream of eating Truma Bizman Hazeh for a variety of reasons. So even though it's true technically, a Kohen would be permitted to eat Truma if we would have Truma around, but two conditions have to be met. Number one, the Kohen has to be Tahor. And number two, the Truma has to be Tahorah. So the odds of the Kohen being Tahor are very, very unlikely. If a Kohen ever went to a cemetery, ever went, was at a Levaya any time, came into contact with a mace, so that Kohen, whether he became in contact with a mace, maybe had to be a miser, whether he did it as a relative, that's permissible, whether he ended up, that ended up somewhere, somebody died on him, whatever it was. So Lamaisa, the Kohen, is Tamei. Once he's Tamei, Tumas Meis, so then he cannot become Torah until he has Eifa Paraduma, which we still haven't succeeded in getting. So Bizman Azeh, there's no question that a Kohen is not going to be permitted to eat Truma. We assume that he's Tamei. Any Kohen who's ever stepped foot into Chutz La'aretz, including all Kohanim sitting in this room right now, who are, have the feet of Chutz La'aretz right now, are also automatically considered to be Tmeim, Tumas Meis, Mendirabonon. Because Eretz Ha'amim, Chazal made a gezeirah that Eretz Ha'amim, Chutz La'aretz is considered to be Tamei on a level of Derabonon. It's not a level of Derais, it's a level of Derabonon. Poskim have a whole discussion what gives a Kohen a right to live in Chutz La'aretz b'zman hazeh. So some heter, whatever heter is, that I'm looking around. I feel bad for the frequencies. They're the first Kohanim who want my face. I'm looking around with the Kohanim. I don't notice anybody. They're off, whatever. So whatever reason is, we assume that you're relying on Chabetz Chaim. Chabetz Chaim also lives in Chutz La'aretz. So whatever cooler works for Chabetz Chaim probably works here also. So anyway, back to the story. So we're not going to have anybody literally eating Truma B'zman HaZeh because the Kohen's Tamei, the Truma's Tamei, so that's going to be out of the question. But the Afrasha has to take place. So why does Afrasha have to take place if we're not giving it to the Kohen anyway? So the answer is clear that there are two different parts of Trumas and Raisus. There's the Afrashas, Trumas and Raisus, and then there's the Mitzvah's Nesina of the Truma to the Kohen, to the Maaseh Levi, to the Ani, whatever the different people are. So just because we will not be able to perform the proper mitzvahs of Achilas Truma B'zman HaZeh, we're not going to bother giving it to the Kohen B'zman HaZeh because he's not going to be able to do anything with it. So we're not going to get half of the mitzvah because Nebuchadnezzar's hands are tied, but the mitzvah of Afrasha we still need. And it's the mitzvah of Afrasha that is really the kashrus part of the story. That when this is not really a shiur about mitzvah tlus baritz, this is really the kashrus angle of Trumas and Maaseres. So in order to solve any kashrus issues, any Mechel Sesuas issues, so as long as the Afrasha is done properly, it doesn't really concern us whether the Nesina, whether the Achila is subsequently done, which the Maaseres is not going to be done. So how do we go about doing this Afrasha? Everything is revolving around Afrasha. How do we go about doing it? So we have to be mafresh all of the proper matanos, because if any of them are not given properly, the trumas, maisers, whatever the year maisers are, if all of them are not hufreshu, not given, but if all of them are not hufreshu properly, then the food remains as tevil. So we have to make sure we try to get this right. So the first thing we have to try to do is to be mafresh truma. We call mafresh truma gedola. How much truma gedola should we give? So here the Gemara tells us that min haTorah, you only have to give a small amount, a really minuscule amount. Chita achas poteres is called a kri. The Torah doesn't say how much. The Torah just says, just give us a little bit. So a little bit would suffice. Nevertheless, Chazal said that mid the Rabbanon, you're not supposed to cheat the Kohen. You're supposed to give a significant amount. How much is a significant amount? The Chazal instituted a little bit of a range. They said that different people are a little nicer than others, some people a little stingier than others. So Chazal said, as long as you're within a certain window, that's acceptable. You can either give 1/40th, 1/50th, or 1/60th of what the total amount of the produce is. If you're a nice guy, you want to help support the Kohanim, so you give 1/40th. If you're a medium kind of a guy, you give 1/50th. If you're a stingy guy, then you give 1/60th. But any of them would be acceptable. If you give less than that, then you're not minatori, you really did it. You're still yotzei, but you didn't really do a fresh truma properly at a level of derabban. So the halacha tells us that the Chazal instituted to up the ante a little bit, to give a 40th, a 50th, a 60th. That's because we want to give the coin something to eat. B'zman HaZeh, we're anyway not giving the coin to eat. We're not even giving this stuff to the coin. What's he going to do with it? It's all truma tameya. There's nothing he could possibly do with it. The only thing potentially the Kohen could do with his Truma Tameya is he could use it as animal food. That the din is that a behemoth Kohen is permitted to eat Truma Tameya. A behemoth Yisrael is in fact not allowed. There's a disadiraisa, according to most, it would appear there's a total prohibition to feed, I'm Yisrael, so I'm not allowed to feed my dogs Truma, but a Kohen would be permitted to feed his dogs a Truma Tameya. So that's the only possible things he's going to do with it. Probably not the most productive thing to do. This halacha, though, actually was put to use. I don't know whether they still practice it anymore, but this was put to use years ago in Eretz Yisrael when those who may remember where the old biblical zoo was. This goes back quite some time. The old Gan HaChayot Tanachi used to be near the Tachanah Merkazit. And remember those days? Man, a long time ago. So it was right next to a Tanuva. So Tanuva had all the fruits and vegetables of all of Yishalayim. So they used to do all the fresh trumas and nifes in the factory. So they had loads and loads and loads of piles and piles and piles of truma that they were separating from different items. And what are you going to do with it? Kohen can't eat it. We're going to throw it to the ground. What are you going to do with it? So they had an arrangement with the biblical zoo that they were makna all the animals talk about hakanos of houses, like we spoke about, they were marking all the elephants and all the lions and tigers. Everything belonged to Mr. Cohen, you know, Rabbi, which Rabbi Cohen it belonged to. And therefore, all the animals were permitted to eat all the tshuma tmeya that was lying around a teruva. So apparently, they had some kind of a setup. They would deliver the stuff to the zoo. I have absolutely no idea whether this is still being practiced. Anyone have any insight? Any inside information about the zoo in Tanuva? And when they moved the zoo, maybe it became a little more of a hassle. But it used to be mamish next door, we just dumped the stuff right into the zoo. Anyway, so the din is that the Kohen's not going to do anything really practically with his tshuva. He doesn't really want it. The last thing Rabbi Finkelstein wants, I should knock on his door and give him a quarter of a tomato. He's really not too interested in it. So what do I do? What do I do instead? So I have to be mafresh, but here, Chazal said, what do you have to be mafresh a 40th, the 50th, it's going to the garbage anyway. So just be mafresh a kol shu. Minatar, it's good anyway. Even midrabban, it's good. It's just you weren't nice to the Kohen, but Bismanazet, the Kohen doesn't want any types. He doesn't want your half peppers and half tomatoes. So therefore, Bismanazet, just we follow what the din derice is, and we just mafresh the smallest amount. So in terms of a fresh struma, so we basically ignore the whole Messina, Chila, the whole 9 yards. It's not relevant for us. And we just separate just to fulfill the mitzvah of Afrasha so that the food should no longer be not kosher. After we finish separating Truma Gedola, then we have to separate Maaser Rishon. So Maaser Rishon goes to the Levi. So Maaser Rishon is a little bit trickier because Maaser Rishon has to be a tenth. You can't, I'll ask somebody, not allowed just even estimate. You have to really get it down to the science. You got to give a tenth. And you have to give a tenth to the Levi. So here it's a little bit easier for us because I really should separate a tenth and I should actually give it to the Levi and the Levi should use it. Why? Because we paskin that Maaser Rishon doesn't have any kedusha to it. There's one taner in Meir holds that Maaser Rishon is also his arm. You're not allowed to eat it in a way that Truma wouldn't be able to be in, but we don't pass like that. We paskin that you're allowed to eat Maaser Rishon no matter what. So you have to give it as a mitzvah to give it to the Levi, and the Levi really could use it. So, oh, wait a second, this is not a bad idea. So we should be separate Maaser Rishon today, and unlike Truma that we just discard, we should give it over, hand it over to the Levi to fulfill the mitzvah properly. So that's the chur what the din should be. So there are many places that do not have this practice, that they don't give it to the Levi, and it's a little bit hard to understand why not. So some want to defend this based on the following, that in terms of kashrus, there's really nothing wrong, because remember we said that the issue of kashrus wise, the machalos asuros are solved once the afrasha is done. Whether you did nesina or not, it's irrelevant to the kashrus status of the fruit. So why are you doing nesina? Because the Kodesh Baruch said to do so. It's a mitzvah zatorah to do nesina. But the mitzvah zatorah is governed by the rules of dine mamonos. And the mammon is whenever you have a suffix mammon, so hamotzi mechaveh olav araya. Whenever we're not sure who owns, who has the right to a certain money, whoever is holding on to it, he has the right to keep that item until proven otherwise. We pass in aloch that enoch mammon acharov. Even if you have a rove, even if you have a majority, there's a 90% chance that the money belongs to you. That's not enough. You have to prove it 100% in Beis Din in order to get the money out of the muksa. So here, how are you going to prove 100% to your levy? Because your father told you levy. Your grandfather told you levy. I don't want to insult any of the levy. I just insulted the Kohanim. I'm going to insult all the people. Obviously, my little people. Okay, so we'll still give you a second aliyah. So some I don't want to insult the newest boss levy in the community. So the some folks came suggested that since we're not 100% sure, 1,000% sure that every person's an authentic levy, maybe someone got a little submission along the way. So then the Yisrael has the right to hold on to the Maaser Rishon and say, Moshe, go prove that you're a levy. So many poskim say that's not right. Many poskim say that's not a nice thing to do. That he's a levy. He says he's a levy. His father's a levy. His grandfather's a levy. The same way we assume that a Kohen. A Kohen says he's a Kohen. We let Kohanim Duchen, Bizman Hazem. Rav Yaakov Emden had a question. He raised the issue. How could we ever be Yotze Pidgin Aben Bizman Hazem? He said, we don't really know 100% that the person is a Kohen. Maybe someone married a Cholol, three generations of a four. Who knows what happened? So comes Yaakov Emden says, he's not sure every time you see a Kohen, so you should give him 5 shekel. Because maybe the first Kohen you did Pidgin Aben with 20 years ago, maybe wasn't the real Kohen. So they say that used to be the practice of the Vilna Gaon. And they said it was the Psak of the Vilna, they said that was the Minhag of the Gaon. The Gaon was the Bechor, he used to give out 5 rubles, 5 shekels to any Kohen. He didn't meet so many people to grow. He sat in his own house and he learned. So it's not like he was running around to a million Kohanim, but whatever Kohen came his way, so he would give him 5 shekel. So I guess he knew all the Kohanim in Vilna knew him already, so he had finished. So we don't follow that practice. Nobody does that bezman hazeh. We assume that the kohanim today are vade kohanim. The kohanim duchen bezman hazeh. They make brachas. They make pidya ben with brachas. Nobody is mefakbek bezman hazeh on the status of the kohanim. We assume, if to the best of the kohen's knowledge, his father taught him he was a kohen, his grandfather was his great grandfather. Dori doros, they were all from the Rosh Hashanah mitzvahs, and as far back as they can remember, they were kohanim. So we assume that they're considered to be kohanim. Kohanim chazaka, we have a chazaka, that mustama they really considered to be kohanim. So it's so to a levi, when it comes to a levi, we assume all the levim, whoever claims they're a levi, is a levi. Let's say, bizman hazeh, when a levi has as a child, we don't go around to do pidgin ben. We assume we give them the second aliyah. We don't like sit around and be mafaklik on people's yuchsin. So therefore, it's kind of hard for us to turn around now and look at Maaseh Rishon and say that no, we're not going to give you Maaseh Rishon. You know why? Because maybe you're not a lady. So many people say, really should. That would be the right thing to do. So yeah, it's not really our responsibility. It means I'm coming to the store and buying food. So it says on the Tudah, the Badat, the Charedis, or Badat's Reuben, or Badat's this, Badat's that. They're telling me that Shuvos and Maaseh were taken off. It's not really my responsibility to ask. And what happened with the... Did they give it to the Levi or not? I don't know. Maybe they didn't. The food is kosher, but they gave it to the Levi or not. It's gezeilah. Okay, so they're not giving you hashkacha on the gezeilah part. They're giving you hashkacha on the kashrus part. So it's gezeilah from the owner, the guy who separated the maisa and didn't give it to this. It's not gezeilah. I'm the consumer. I don't know. Is this the maisa? I'm sitting and eating a pack of grapes. I have no idea where the maisa is. So for me, it's not a sofik. If the Levi would come knocking on my door and say, hey, you owe me maisa. I say, I owe you maisa. I don't know who you are. I don't know what these grapes are. I have no idea. So it's not really my responsibility. But the owners, the guys who separated originally, they have to make a din l'cheshbon whether this is an appropriate kula or not. Again, for most of us, it's not relevant because by the time we get to be mafresh shumas and maaseh, say you go to the farmer's market and you buy tomatoes. But just parenthetically, buying vegetables now is going to be another issue, the shmita issue, the gamri different issue. So everyone should just keep their eyes open. Again, we love to support Eretz Yisrael as much as we can, but you have to just be aware that there are already going to start to be potential Shemitah issues in terms of vegetables coming from Eretz Yisrael now. So let's say in a not Shemitah year, so I go to the market and I buy tomatoes, Israeli tomatoes, wonderful. So I'll separate two Maaseh. So I'm going to separate the Maaseh Rishon. I want to be firm. I came to the Ohr HaTorah 8 o'clock in the morning, Sunday morning shiur. I want to be extra special, careful. I want to run around to give it to a Levi. I don't have to do that because that's mamash avotz bechelav araya. Go to Levi, go prove that nobody separated Shumas and Maaseh in this. I have no idea what happened. You know how many hands this stuff passed literally through? It was grown on the farm somewhere. Who knows? Maybe the owner of the farm was mafresh. Maybe Tanuva got involved. Maybe someone got involved. Someone with the pork got involved. Everything is fakeus. When we separate Shumas and Maaseh on stuff in on Newbridge and the farm, we do without a bracha because we're not sure. Nobody's certain that the... I can't say for 100% sure that nobody along the line of got around to be mafresh shumas and maaseh. So supposed to. We don't have anyone who's signing off that they did. Years ago, they were trying to get some of the hashgacha organizations to set up a system to mamash b'mav. Everything that leaves Eretz Yisrael should be hufresh shumas. Maaseh never happened. Some things are, but some things are not. So I can never say with certainty. So I have to be mafresh, but on the other hand, I could turn around to the Levi and say, I'm not going to necessarily give it to you. But let's say I know for certain that something is mamish tevel gum. I grew it in Eretz Yisrael, my own backyard. So then the more correct thing to do is to give my submission to the Levi. The Truma you can't give to the Kohen because it's the Kedush, it's also the Betuma, so you can't do anything anyway. But the my submission should in fact be given to the Levi. We did this a couple of years ago. Remember I told all the story when Meyachim and I went to a vineyard, went to a kerem, and we had the opportunity to do all the mitzvahs of Tloid Barat. So we're doing Peret and Leket and Eidolus and Shicha and Pei and you name it. And then we brought all the grapes back and we were mafresh shumas and maaseh with a bracha, the whole nine yards. I remember we did Rias Pnei Abayis. First we brought it into the house. We walked it into a house in Beit Meir. We were official Rias Pnei Abayis and Schaev. I can't say Minha Torah, but as close to the rice as you could possibly get. We made it as Mamish Mamish Chayav Gomor. And then we were separating tubas and maisers, and we had a whole batch of grapes that were Maaseh Rishon. So we gave them to Levi, we gave them to Asher Shrei, who was just here. He was just here last Shabbos. I forget who he's friends with. He was just floating around. So he was Do Shrier's son, Do Shrier's the OU's son. He's a Levi. So we handed him a whole batch of grapes to fulfill the mitzvah of Mount Dosa Levia. And then he was walking around eating them, munching on his grapes. So that's the correct thing to do. Then after you finish Maaseh Rishon, then you have to decide about separating the next next batch. The next batch is either Maisa Sheni or Maisa Ani, depending on which year you're in. So you have to pay attention which year the cycle you're up to. If you're in years 1, 2, or 4, or 5, it's Maisa Sheni. If it's 3 or 6, then it's Maisa Ani, and the different things have to be done. So you have to separate a tenth. Maisa Ani is easy. You have to find an Ani to give it to. So here also you have a little bit of an issue that some mefakfik a little bit, some place they're not as careful about giving Maisa Ani to the Niyam. You're really supposed to give Maisa Ani to the Niyam. Maybe you could enter into an agreement with an Ani. Maybe the Ani doesn't want a half a tomato and a half a carrot. He'd rather give him a check. So some places set up different deals with the Ani and that they'll buy off the Maisa or Ani off of them. Because Maisa Ani doesn't have the Kedusha. So even if I'm not an Ani, I'm allowed to eat it. But if you're able to give the Maisa Ani, that's wonderful. So that's what we did. So we took all the... That year happened to have been a Maisa Ani year. It was the end of the third year. So we took all the grapes we had separated as Maisa Ani. And we gave them, there was some one or two workers in the kitchen who apparently didn't have a real parnasa, so we didn't want to embarrass them, but we had somebody brought them to them and said, oh, it's a gift from the Americans. The Americans give you a bunch of grapes. So we gave them all the Maisa Ani grapes.
Does that think at all about what year it is?
No, but we know what year. We know what year. I mean, we know as much as we know what the Shemitah year is, so we pass in halacha, like the Rambam tells us, they have to follow what the Minig Yisrael was in Eretz Yisrael all the years, so we keep track of the years.
How do you know how to calculate, like, the
10%? Oh, I'll tell you, it's not so easy. Not so
simple. I was involved in this one,
too.
It's not so easy.
Not so easy. No, not so easy. So I didn't do it myself. I had anyone from Beit Meir Day, so there's a man on the Moshav, named Rabbi David Schechter. He's one of those guys who knows how to do everything. So, you know, he's the sorry for the Sheikh. You know, these guys just got it all down pat. So I brought all these grapes, and we said, what do I do? You know, he pulls out, yanks out his scales, he's got his Maiseretian scales, which I don't know what he was doing. I had absolutely no idea how we calculate, but he told me this is what you do. So that's the answer. But I'll get to you in a second how you calculate your tomatoes. That's much, much, much easier. So if it happens in a Maiseretian year, then it's a little bit more complicated because Maiseretian does have Kedusha to it, so you can't just stop eating yourself. You have to be either bring to Shalim and eat the Kedusha of Tara, which is not going to happen, or you have to be Poder. So to be Poder, you have to set aside a coin and you have to transfer the Kedusha from the Maisa Sheni onto the coin. And then you leave the coin aside at the end of the third year, the end of the sixth year, end of the cycle. So then you have to discard the coin. I think this year is we're coming up, right? This year is should be a beer, right? So it should be a beer. This Erev Pesach should be a beer. Yeah. Oh my goodness, we haven't done that in a while. Okay, so we have to discard all the coins that have Kedusha Maisa Sheni on them, have to be discarded. So in the olden days, they simply threw them to the Yam HaMelech, threw them to the ocean or something. So Bizman Hazeh in YU, what we do is we bring them to the MTA Chem Lab, and we have a sulfuric, I don't know, I forgot which kind of acid. One of the acids we have, and Rabbi Willig, every 3 years, Rabbi Willig does the same stunt, and he puts on his goggles, and they have a beaker of the stuff that's like smoking, and he takes a couple of quarters and throws them in, turns a purple and green, and a lot of poof comes and shine. We write in the mitzvah of their meisers. We were told that is okay to do that. That is not against the law to do that, even though it does say that it is illegal to destroy currency. So the lawyers who we were consulted told us that law only applies derech hashchosa. It's like a din. And the riot that was is that the pennies that they make, when they, you know, you know those stands, those machines, they stretch out your penny, destroy your penny. So that's not considered to be a violation of the din of the machusa because it's not, you're not destroying. You're not allowed to show that you don't, I don't like the currency of America, I'm going to destroy it. If you're doing it for some shtick or something like that, so that was never included in the Yisr. We were told. That wasn't included in the Yisr, and selling houses without shtaros is also okay, and you can sell lakko without licenses from Bechiris Chamash, all those things. It's all nimnum, it's all understood. There's a certain understanding that the government couldn't care, as long as we're not trying to do any monkey business, as long as we're just trying to keep the halacha properly, so they give us a little bit of freedom of religion, first of the Bill of Rights. So as long as we don't do anything that's mamish against the law, just we do these funny kinds of things, so then no one's too upset about that. Anyway, so that's the every 3 years. If you want, if you're interested, a couple of days before Pesach this year, remind me. So we'll try to anyone who wants to come and join us for the beer meisters party that takes place in the MTA Chem Lab, we'll try to invite you. Okay. Anyway. So it sounds like this is very, 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 very complicated over here. There are so many things to think about. I gotta go. All I want to do is be a nice, nice fellow, and buy my Israeli tomatoes. Again, leave out Shemitah for a minute. And I got trumas and maises and maises. I don't know. So now we're gonna make trumas and maises made simple. That was the complicated. So now it's made very, very easy. So what you can do is you don't even have to like think through this whole story. what you could do is just, let's say I have a couple of tomatoes. So you take off a little bit of the, I left out Trumas Maaser, I'm sorry. That after you separate Maaser Rishon, so then you have to separate a tenth off of the Maaser Rishon. That tenth gets the status of Truma, and that part can't be eaten. That part has to go to the Kohen as well. Again, the Banu Zer not going to. So what we do is as follows. Tachlis, I got a whole bunch of tomatoes that are either Vadei Tevel, Sofei Tevel, whatever it is. So I'm going to do all the Afrashas. So I simply do as follows. I take a little bit more than a hundredth of what the fruit are. And it doesn't have to be perfect. So it doesn't have to be weighed out a little bit more than a hundredth. What do I accomplish a little bit more than a hundredth? So Trumas Maaser is a hundredth. It's a Maaser and a Maaser. And Truma Gedola, we said, is Kol Shehu. So now I have a little bit more than a hundredth. I can take a little more. I can't measure it. So I think a little bit more than a hundredth, whatever it is. A little bit more than a hundredth. And I take it and I put it into a little plastic baggie. And that little bit more than a hundredth is going to be the Truma Gedola, together with the Trumas Maaser, all rolled into one. That is going to be discarded. No one's going to eat that. That has Kedusha to it, and that's Aser for you to eat. It's Aser for the Kohen to eat the Betuma. Nobody's going to touch it. No one's going to eat that. You have to put it in a bag and wrap it up nicely, bekavadik, and then you can throw it to the garbage. That's, you can't just take it and throw it in with the dirty diapers itself. You have to wrap it up nicely, put it in a little bag or something, and then you can discard it. So, and you're going to make the following declaration. You're going to say, you can read it off the sitter. See if you can find it in the center. I don't know what to page it's on. First of Shabbos. What?
Between
Shabbos.
Right
before Shabbos? That's between Shabbos and Mincha. Between Shabbos and Mincha. Is the benching or something? Full benching. Oh, here it is. Yeah, okay. Hafrash of Shabbos and Rises. Okay. Grains, fruit, and vegetables that grew in the halakhic boundaries of Eretz Yisrael may not be consumed until too much, too much mice, or various or mice are separated. One separates a bit more than 1% from the produce and declares it to be Truma and Trumas Maaser. The Maaser Sheni is still present in the remaining food, is then redeemed. If the status of his questionable blessings, but not the declarations, are omitted. So what does the person say, Tachlis? So he takes a little bit of this stuff and he puts this aside, more than a hundredth, but he has to mafresh the Maaser as well. So it makes a long gemagillan saying, Mashu Yosem Yechem Emeim Yakol Sheyesh Kanarei with Truma Gedola. So he says, this is Truma Gedola and this is Trumas Maaser. And then he says, and the stuff that's on the side is the Maaser Rishon, and the stuff on the other side is Maaser Sheni. If it's Maaser Ani, it's Maaser Ani. And he just refers to sides, the stuff on the north side, the stuff on the west side, the east side, whatever it is, all the different parts of the that he declares. All these should be the appropriate matanos, and then he's going to go in and eat them anyway. So he doesn't have to mamash separate them, literally, physically separate them, because he's going to eat them. He's not giving it to the Kohen, not giving it to the Levi. I forget the Kohen. He's not giving it to the Levi because he's not giving it to the Ani. He doesn't even know that any of this stuff is really chayiv in the first place. But he has to do a afroshes. That's the goal. The Sini you don't have to do to make a kosher, but a afroshes you have to do. So he goes in and he does the proper afroshes, and then everything is still there. The only things that have to be separated physically out are the Truma Gedola and the Truma Smaisa, because those things are also to be eaten by the Nine Kohanim, even by the Kohanim today in the state of Tuma. But the Maaser Rishon and the other things are going to remain behind, and you're going to end up eating them. Maaser Sheni you can eat? Well, you can't eat Maaser Sheni. You're going to be pulled in the Maaser Sheni. So as soon as you finish this whole story, so then you say, Maaser Sheni is there, Hu v'chum shor v'mechulal pruta achas v'rabatbeya, everything is mechulal on the coin that I've separated in advance for Pidgin Maaser Sheni. Who separated in advance? Whose coin are you separating from? So Baruch Hashem, Rabbi Willig has given us the zchus of using his coins. He has coins sitting in the back of the Young Israel of Riverdale. They're sitting on the wall. And he told me that I can tell everybody I want that they have his permission to use his coins as well. So when you get to that state in the passage, instead of saying Sheyichadati, just say Sheyichad Rabbi Willig. You want to spell out of your Gizmo Riverdale 10471, whatever, you can do whatever you want, as long as you say it's his coins, that he separated, that he's designated, and that all your Maaser Sheni goes onto those coins. The mile of that is multifold. One of them is then you don't have to worry about burning them, destroying them, getting rid of them in the 3 years. You don't have any Kedusha coins floating around. Everything is just transferred over to those coins. So the bottom line is you have to make sure you do all the afrashas. The afrashas are simply done by Dibor. The only thing that's physically done is the Truma and the Trumas Maaser. What if a person is lazy and doesn't want to say this whole passage, or if he can't, doesn't have a sitter in front of him? So what the Chazon Ish said, what a person can say is as follows, that he takes aside the one and a hundredth, and he has the coin sitting in Riverdale, and he says, I want all the afrashas and all the chilulim, everything, hakol, mikol, kol, should all be chal, as it says in the Art School Siddur on page between Shachos and Mincha, whatever page it says, they should all follow. The Chazanish did not say in the Art School Siddur. He said, what you could say is, Kakosu b'sefer Chazanish. He gave you a right to use the sefer, that Kakosu b'sefer Chazanish, whatever the Nusach is, and that's good to go. So those who want to go the longer version, which is the Lechachila version, should say what it says in the Siddur. Those who, for whatever reason, are stuck. So B'di'evit and Shasach Haki can rely on this shorthand version of this as well. So again, the bottom line is that this applies to anything that grows in Eretz Yisrael. Tavadais and Tesvekis, and the Hafrasha part is the much more important part. The Nesina part, maybe you're going to do it. Most of us are never ever going to do Nesina anyway, because most of us is just a lot of Tesvekis anyway. But the Hafrasha has to be done properly. So this...
It's not as that in Eretz Yisrael, is it better to buy from a store that sells fruit that you know has a good Hashem, you know, should be much mistaken, or should one try to ask to buy from a place that probably not has a good
Hashem? Yeah, it's going to be very hard to find a place that really did it, because the truth is that all this stuff goes through all the different tenuvas, even the places that quote-unquote, you know, that we're nervous about, nobody's going to go ahead and be mafresh, you know, with a brach on these things. And the Ruv would probably have the
most mafresh.
Yeah, there's always a beautiful idea to try to run to the mitzvahs. So I remember I was once sitting in the basement in Beit Meir, and Rabbi David Shechter walks in with a bowl of sabras that he just plucked off his tree. So he said, Rabbi Solovsky, would you like to have this chus of performing tribus and maizes with a brach and everything? I said, great, wonderful. So that's a beautiful thing to do. But it's not so easy.
So
if
we go to the Bloomberg Farmer's Market,
No. Well, again, putting aside Shemitah. Shemitah is a different story. Shemitah is a Svich and a Shemitah. Putting aside Shemitah, it's a wonderful thing to support Eretz Yisrael. So if you see Israeli tomatoes, Israeli peppers, you want to buy them because of the hate, beautiful thing. Just the Mafra, Shemitah, and Mises problem.
Is there a mitzvah to support Eretz Yisrael?
Is the mitzvah?
Is it something that's a real
mitzvah? The Chei Achi Chei Mach. We're supposed to try to support the Chena B'nai Yisrael as much as we can. So that's a beautiful thing to try to support. And especially in Eretz Yisrael, why shouldn't we have a chelik? It's a beautiful thing to try to support the economy of Eretz Yisrael as much as we can. I'm not saying you're mechuyev to go run around all the time. Dafka to go run and make, I'm only going to buy the Carmel to me. I'm not going to buy the Sunset to me. You know, I'm mechuyev to run, drive so crazy to buy only Eretz Yisrael stuff, but whatever you can. So it's a beautiful thing. But in Shemitah, it's a little bit of a more complicated story. Okay? So this whole sugya of Tevel and Trumas and Afrashas and Kohanim and all the above, this applies, and it's obviously much more here to a much less extent, but there's one part of this sugya that is very, very relevant for us, and it's relevant in Chutz La'aretz, and that's the other kind of Truma and the other kind of Tevel, and that's Afrashas Chala. And that kind of segues into our next kashrus topic. That's something that applies in our own kitchens, in our own bakeries, obviously, even in Chutz La'aretz, the mitzvah of Afrashas Chala. But the first question is, why does this apply any more than the Trumas and Maisus? It's the same issue. Isn't this also a mitzvah of Baretz? So the answer is yes, it really is. That Meikra Din Min HaTorah, so Chala is also, doesn't really apply in Chutz La'aretz. It's also agricultural in nature, but Midrabbanan, Chazal instituted Chala even in Chutz La'aretz. Why did they change? Why did they institute Chala in Chutz La'aretz? And the other Trumas and Maisus they didn't? So the answer is because Chala, although technically, you know, conceptually, it's a mitzvah of Baretz, most people don't view it as that, because the trumas and maizes people think of in terms of the farmer, you know, out in the field somewhere, whereas challah is separated, not out in the fields. In fact, you can't separate it out in the fields. You have to separate it only when it's made into a dough. So that happens in the kitchen. It happens in the bakery. So that's already very, very away from the farmer. So people don't view it so much as a mitzvah of bars. People view it more in terms of kashrus, and therefore, with the rabbanon, they were concerned that... And therefore, they instituted a mitzvah with the rabbanon called the Afrashas Chala. So, lemaisa, we have to separate Chala b'zman hazeh, even in Chutz La'aretz, but with the bracha, it's a real, real mitzvah with the rabbanon, but min haTorah, it would not apply. And the Emes says that it probably doesn't apply min haTorah in Eretz Yisrael also, based on some of the reasons that we spoke about earlier, why Truma doesn't apply. The Rambam had a famous shita that for Truma, you need bias kulchev, you need rov of Klai Yisrael to come to Eretz Yisrael, which you technically, halachically, still don't have today. And therefore, Truma doesn't apply min haTorah. So that Rambam was very controversial, because the Gemara never says that din b'yas kulcha by Truma, but it does say by Chala. Chala, it says it explicitly. So even those who disagree with the Rambam would probably concede, in terms of Hilchos Afrashas Chala, that Chala b'zman hazeh, even in Eretz Yisrael, would probably only be midrabbanan. So Chutz La'aretz, for sure it's midrabbanan, and Eretz Yisrael, it's probably midrabbanan as well. You still have to separate Chala properly. So we have to talk a little bit about what Afrashas Chala means, and related to some of the things in terms of truma, some of the differences between afrasha and asina and achila, how that plays out bizman is that, and then to go through some of the technical issues as to what has to receive a fresh schala, what kind of breads, what kind of cakes, what kind of pastries, what kind of donuts, what kind of things of the nature, where and when a fresh schala applies. So Beis Hashem, next week we'll try to pick up in terms of a fresh schala. I'm not sure. It wasn't my idea.